Today's Teisho will be on Case 5 in the Book of Serenity. Case 5 is entitled Jing Wan and the Price of Rice. Introduction. Siddhartha cut off his flesh to give to his parents, yet is not listed in the legends of filial children. Devadatta pushed over a mountain to crush the Buddha, but did he fear the sound of sudden thunder? Having passed through the forest of thorns and cut down the old sandalwood tree, just wait till the year ends. As of old, early spring is still cold. Where is the Buddha's body of reality? Case. A monk asked Jing Wan, "What is the great meaning of Buddhism?" Jing Wan said, "What is the price of rice in Luling?" Verse. The accomplishing works of great peace has no sign. The family way of the peasants is most pristine, only concerned with village songs and festival drinking. How would they know the virtues of Shun or the benevolence of Yao? Monk asked Jing Wan, "What is the meaning of Buddhism?" Jing Wan said, "What is the price of rice in Luling?" So I want to thank all of you for coming here to practice Zen this morning. In my opinion, this is the most lovely way to spend a morning. People come here, they get up early, and they come, and they practice Zen together. A number of people came here very early, 7 o'clock, and so by the end of the day, they will have been here for 5 hours. And some people came at 9:30, and we have a long sit at 9:30. Basically, an hour of meditation with no break. That's quite a bit of concentrated sitting. And if you came at 7, after the sutras, we had an hour and a half of concentrated meditation. So that's quite a bit of meditation. Zazen is challenging. Some people do this, and it doesn't resonate with them. And some people do it, and it resonates with them, but they're a little bit afraid of the challenging aspect of it. When you came to sit at 9:30, we could have done a half-hour sit, and then we could have walked around for 15 minutes, and then we could have done another half-hour sit. That's possible. That's possible to do. And if you came at 7, at 8 o'clock when we started doing Zazen, we could have had a sit for, say, 20 minutes, 10 minutes of walking, and a sit for 20 minutes, 10 minutes of walking, and then another sit, and then a bathroom break. If we sat in this way, with shorter periods of meditation and walking meditation in between, it would be okay. In my opinion, it would be pretty good. You would sit for a fair amount of time, and at the end of it, your mind would be calmer than when you started. So why don't we do that? Well, in Zen practice, there is a principle which I have explained before, but some of you are new to this, there's really two aspects of Zazen practice. One is ki, and the other is kyo. So, if you are drawing a bow, if you're shooting an arrow at a target and you draw a bow, you need a sufficient amount of ki to reach the target. So, you have to draw the bow, and if any of you have ever fired a bow, they're actually quite difficult to draw. You know, the string is already quite, has to be quite tight on the bow. And in fact, stringing a bow is really hard. There was a period in my life when I was very much fascinated by archery. And a friend of mine had an old bow and taught me how to string it. And it was really hard. He had a pretty serious bow, and you really struggle to get the string over the edge of the bow. The bow is very strong, compound piece of wood, and it pulls the string very, very tight. So then you put, there's a little notch in the bow for the arrow, and it goes just above your hand. And then you have to draw that string, and it, and you can, for me, and not being a very strong person, when I would draw that string, my arm would be trembling. And then the arrow would fly, and you know, it would go more or less towards the target. Well, when you draw a bow like that, you draw the bow, you're capturing a great deal of energy, this would be kinetic energy, if I remember from the seventh grade, right? But you're drawing a lot of energy, and it's all being held and gathered up. And then you let the arrow go, and that releases the energy stored in the string and the bow, and it propels it towards the target. If you don't have enough ki, if you don't have enough energy, the arrow doesn't reach the target, it falls short. And if you have, if you draw the bow too much, if you draw the string too much, draw the string too tightly, that the arrow won't fly properly. So, you know, firing a bow, an arrow, is actually quite difficult, because you have to have a great deal of energy stored up when you draw the string, but not too much. And then you let the arrow go, and you have to sort of be open to the experience. You have to just let the arrow go. If you try to control the arrow after you let the string go, disaster can happen. So there's two aspects to firing a bow, ki and kyo. And you could think of ki as storing up energy, and you could think of kyo as letting it fly, letting it free. Now, in zazen also, there is ki and there is kyo. So, you know, if we sit for a period of time, we might begin to feel a little uncomfortable. So, you know, if you sit for 15 minutes, you're probably okay. If you sit for 20 minutes, you're probably getting a little bit uncomfortable. If you sit for 35 minutes, you're starting to get very uncomfortable, right? Now, you know, we could stop at 15 minutes, but why do we go to 35 minutes? Or why do we have an hour sit instead of two 20-minute sits? You know, my personal feeling is that you'll have a deeper sit. We'll all have a deeper sit if we have more ki, if we build up more energy. And I'm so convinced that this is true, you know. When we sat for half an hour, it was difficult. And at the end, you probably felt a kind of internal pressure. It's like you're building up internal pressure, and you want to move, but you don't move. You focus on your breath, and then you want to move, and you focus on your breath, and you want to move, and you focus on your breath. And this is like drawing the string of the bow. You're building up a kind of internal pressure. See? And then the bell rings. Ah, you uncross your legs. And then we do it again. Now when you get off the cushion, sometimes you'll notice that you're in a very different mental place than when you sat down. Your mind is much more calm and stable, more open and free. I deeply believe this to be true. This happens to me all the time. When you draw the bow too little, the arrow doesn't reach the target. You've got to create a certain amount of pressure to have the release experience. I believe this with all my heart. So, you know, when I do three sits, that's a challenge for me too, even though I've been doing this for 35 years. Three sits with no break is a challenge. And then, you know, I try not to make have a break after that, and then I do two more sits, and by the end, there's a lot of pressure building up inside, a lot of pressure. My legs hurt too, and I'm holding my attention on my breath like a laser, right? following each breath, you know. Then I ring the bell. Fortunately, I control the bell. So I ring the bell, and I get up, and my legs are sore. But I feel often incredibly calm, clear, and elated. So this is a process that we go through on the cushion when we do zazen. And it's not meant to be an exercise in endurance or how tough you are. It's not sadistic. It's not meant to punish. It's not meant to make you uncomfortable. It's meant to help you to focus your body's energy in a way that will produce a kind of liberation, In that pressure state, you go through a transformation. Your mind changes to another consciousness. It's just a fact. So, you know, if we're sitting on a chair and we're very comfortable, it's very difficult for us to summon up our force, our ki, our chi, and focus the mind in a liberating way. We tend to be, it's like a spaceship, you know, it's like a rocket that goes up, but there's not enough force to escape from the Earth's orbit, you know, not enough energy to escape from the orbit of our normal mental habits, you know. So if you're troubled by something, you can't usually, just by saying, stop thinking about it, you can't stop thinking about it. You know, if something's bothering you, you just rehearse the thing that's bothering you again and again and again, and you try to snap out of it. Maybe you go for a jog, maybe you watch TV, but then you come back and it's still there. It's very difficult to escape from the orbit of our ordinary mental habits. So, you know, zazen, as we practice it, is designed to push you out of that orbit, you know. So when we sit on the cushion, after 15 minutes, it might be good to break. After 25 minutes, we could break. We could do some walking meditation. You'd sit back down. You would be in a deeper place. But if you build up more ki, if you concentrate more deeply, you will enter that liberated state more deeply. I'm convinced of this, you know. I too have pain in my legs, and by the way, it's hard to say who is in a more difficult situation: the person who rings the bell or the person who's waiting to have the bell rung. If you're waiting to have the bell rung, it's stressful because you know you don't know when the bell's going to ring, right? So your legs hurt, and you're thinking, "Ring the bell, ring the bell, ring the bell," and that's a difficult position to be in. I know because I've been there. On the other hand, think of the poor guy ringing the bell, right? Because he, you know, his legs are hurting. He looks at his watch and says, uh-oh, 10 more minutes. Okay, get back into, focus on the breath, focus on the breath, see? But if that person has the strong enough not to ring the bell and let it go for another 10 minutes, people's minds will be in a deeper place. People's minds will be in a deeper place. So, you know, this, as I say, this is not about enduring pain. It's not about punishing yourself. It's about liberating yourself. And it's using the body as an instrument to enter an altered state of consciousness. That's what we're doing. And the body is a beautiful machine for doing this. So our response to this kind of internal pressure is to shift consciousness, actually go through a shift along the spectrum of consciousness from ordinary discriminating mind into this other mind, which is much less clear. You'll notice after sitting for 5 sits or after sitting for 2 sits, your mind is less cluttered with thoughts. It's more open. It might seem rather blank. It might even seem rather dead, but don't be deceived. It's not dead. You're just now much more open and calm, and you're actually more receptive to things around you. So this is really quite important. You know, we 2 weeks ago did a session where we sit for 9 hours a day, and that's very challenging. You know, there's no question about it. It's hard to do so much meditation. Sometimes my legs are really hurting. But you know, by around day 3 of session, you're in a very, very different state of consciousness, you know. And so, you know, the method of Zen is to produce this state of open, calm, focused awareness. And Zazen, seated meditation, might seem a little crude, but actually it's incredibly effective. You know, it will get you to this place faster than anything else I know. You know, there are other methods. You know, people can engage in prayer. They can engage in reading sutras or reciting sutras. There's other kinds of, yoga type activities are also very stress releasing. But, having done all of that, in my personal experience is that this is really the deepest, this is the fastest way to get to this very deep place. And it's very transformative. This is really quite important to understand. I sometimes take for granted that people understand this. You know, the body is like a machine for waking up, and one of the things we're doing is building up this pressure. And when we are in that pressured state, we change states of consciousness. We change into another, enter into another consciousness. One thing you can do if you're uncomfortable is to focus on your breath. You know, your breath is not what you think. You know, we have an image of our body which is created by science, right? It's a scientific understanding of the body. It's an objective understanding of the body. So, you know, we know that oxygen goes into the lungs as O2, and it goes out of the lungs as CO2, right? You know, we have this, that might not be right, my science is not that good, but oxygen goes in, and carbon dioxide goes out, and some oxygen, it goes into our bloodstream. We know all of this from high school science, you know. But if you forget everything you know from science, and you begin to experience the body directly and immediately, it's quite a different situation. You know. So, you know, your breath is really this amazing, amazing device, if you want to put it that way. You know, if you watch your breath, again, if you just watch your breath repetitively, it will carry you to an altered state of consciousness. It will help you move into this more open, expansive, receptive intelligence. All you have to do is watch your breath, and it helps to work with your hara, your dantian. So you squeeze the dantian as you breathe out, and then you relax, and you squeeze the dantian as you breathe out, and you relax. And if you are in pain and you focus on your breath with great intensity, you will be able to sweep the pain away. And so, you know, the ideal situation is to have some physical discomfort, but sweep it away with the pain, with the breath, and then it comes back and you sweep it away with the breath, and then it comes back and you sweep it away with the breath. And as you do this, your mind is becoming more and more focused, still, and alert. Now, it may not feel alert. You know, some people are very, they like the mind to feel crisp and conscious. So, you know, sometimes when I'm at my computer, I'll be writing and the words will just come out. You know, I won't have to reach for the words, they'll just come out. And I'll be surprised. You know, a word will come right out on the page and it's just the right word. And I haven't maybe used that word in a year. And I'll admire my own intelligence, you know. People do this sometimes. You know, I'll write something and I'll think, oh, that's perfect. The wording of that is perfect, you know. And then I'll go on. See, and I like that feeling sometimes. It's like crisp, present. You know, it's like I'm thinking right from the front of my head, so to speak, right? This is actually a very shallow form of consciousness. Deeper consciousness doesn't feel like this. It doesn't feel crisp. The lines are not well defined, and so on. When you're in a deeper state of consciousness, at first it may feel a little bit uncomfortable because it's going to feel like your mind is more vague or fuzzy. You may even feel like you're about to drift off to sleep, but you won't drift off to sleep. You're not in your normal discriminating mind. You're in another mental place. And it can feel a little fuzzy, a little dark, a little stupid, maybe, a little stupid. But don't be deceived. It's not stupidity. It's really a heightened receptivity. You know, normally, it's very difficult for us to be present in what is happening 100%. Normally, we aren't able to be here now, in the moment, because we're projecting onto the moment other things that are going on in our mind. So when you're looking at something, you know, you're not just looking at it, you're also playing a movie in your head. This is very typical. So, you know, the other day I had a problem at work, and I was driving home, and I noticed that the wind blowing through some trees, and it was very beautiful, but it was hard for me to see the trees, and it was hard for me to be present with the wind, because in my mind I was replaying the problem from the day. And so, you know, I couldn't really be 100% present with the trees and the wind and this beautiful scene in front of me, because part of my mind was still rehearsing these other events. Now, you know, this is very typical of our ordinary mental state, that we're not able to be here 100% because we're bringing with us all of this baggage from the past, basically. And sometimes we're aware of the baggage, and sometimes it's deeply stored in the unconscious, but it's coloring our experience. You know, you can have certain reactions to things that were formed when you were just a little child. You know, you can react to certain circumstances in ways you don't understand, but those ways go back to when you were a little child. This is all part of what colors or deforms our experience of the moment. So, you know, this project of entering into a different state of mind is really quite important, because it's ordinarily not possible to be 100% here without any projecting onto what's happening, without the movies playing in our heads. And when we sit down on the cushion and we, you know, don't move for an hour and go through this process of watching the breath and pushing the pain away, we enter into an altered state of consciousness, which I think is really quite precious, quite amazing. You know, the fact that humans can get to this place at all is just an incredible stroke of luck, I guess you could say. And we owe a great debt of gratitude to all the teachers from the Buddha's time to the present, who have helped to perfect this method. Because I think Zazen is quite an amazing technique. So, you know, if you are like me, you come to the cushion sometimes carrying a lot of baggage. And you may feel that you're trapped in your own thoughts or trapped in your own distress. And you sit down on the cushion and in no time at all you'll begin to feel better. Last night, somebody came to sit who has been sitting very regularly. He didn't come this morning, but he's quite serious about his practice. And I said, "How was your sit at the end of the night?" And he said, "You know, I thought I had a terrible sit, but I feel absolutely wonderful afterwards." And that can happen. You know, you could be in a lot of pain when you're sitting, or you could be very distracted and you could have to work very hard to get back to your breath. But ultimately, you know, you get off the cushion, and one of the things I would say is please check, you know, after you're done sitting, you know, and you get off the cushion, check, how do you feel? You know, the chances are you're much calmer, you're much more relaxed, your wrinkles have been smoothed out, you're much less defensive than when you sat down on the cushion. And I think that's really quite remarkable and quite wonderful. You know, some people don't understand Zen because they think that they don't understand why we sit for so long and why you have to struggle with discomfort. Also, you know, I have to admit that doing this does create some stress. Stress. You know, I was interested the other day, I read an article in the paper about some psychotherapists who went to a monastery in Bhutan, which is a Tibetan area where Tibetan Buddhism is practiced. And the therapist was working with some of the monks and nuns, and he even worked with the abbot, and they interviewed the abbot, and the abbot said, "Well, you know, he's helping me a lot because meditation is very stressful." And I agree, you know, actually. There are ways to meditate that are just designed to produce stress reduction. That is definitely so. So you can just meditate for stress reduction. And that can be done. It's very easy. You know, you can meditate 15 minutes a day, get off the cushion, and you're less stressed. That's definitely so. That is really not the goal of Zazen, however. Let me just say. You know, the Buddha didn't come to teach people how to deal with their stress. You know, he didn't say, "Behold, no stress." Right? What the Buddha taught was the path to enlightenment. That's what he taught. So it's not the same as no stress. These are different goals. So Zazen can be practiced for stress reduction, but it can also be practiced for enlightenment, for heightening your awareness and opening your mind to a more comprehensive experience of life. So those two things, that's not the same as stress reduction. Sometimes doing meditation can be stressful. If you're working on a koan during a session, that can be very stressful. Sometimes I have been working in a koans and I've been at session and I have been ticked off, you know, like annoyed, almost like, as we say, pissed off, you know. I've been in work situations where people have, you know, I've been very irritable while I'm working on koans. And you can say, "Well, what good is that?" But sometimes, you know, in order to make a real change, you have to put up with a little stress. You have to put up with a little little irritation. I was reading something the other day that I've been very interested in this issue of stress because I get stressed, you know. And Zen does help me deal with my stress, but stress reduction is not the only goal of Zazen. I was reading an article, an interview, with a person who, there's a whole field of psychology called, I think it's called positive psychology. And I love it. It's based on the idea that we should be pursuing happiness and that everything should lead to happiness. And they interviewed this man who's very distinguished in the field of positive psychology, and he said something like getting happiness is not easy, and sometimes it involves a lot of stress. And he said, actually, people who have no stress are often not happy. This is a fact. You know, so stress is a complicated thing. You know, he said, you need some stress, he said, to be happy. Isn't that interesting? I have a friend who is retired and is so unhappy. And his life should be so happy. He gets up in the morning, he gets a check every month. It's a big check. He doesn't have to worry. He has a nice house. He gets up every day, and he doesn't have anything to do. And he's having remorse that he retired. And he just gets up all day, and he's alone with his obsessions and his regrets. And what he really needs is some stress, you know. They say, actually, that some stress is good for your health, believe it or not. It is. It's good. We're told stay away from all stress, but actually, you know, some stress is good for your health, believe it or not. People who are stressed, who have reasonable levels of stress, are actually healthier than people who have no stress. Check it out. You can Google. I could be making it up, but I'm not. Apparently, having some stress is good for your health. We're wired to deal with challenges, right? We're wired to deal with challenges. We're in the absence of challenges, we don't necessarily do very well. We're not necessarily happy. You know, I have friends who are artists, and when they're doing their work, they are stressed, right? They're just stressed. But, you know, they love what they do. They love what they do. It's stressful, but they love it because they like where it takes them, ultimately. You know. Let me just say one other thing about stress. I'm not telling you that you should be stressed to the point of a nervous breakdown or something. I'm not saying that. But I think we often confuse two different things. There is stress, and there is the experience of powerlessness. See, there's stress, and there's the experience of powerlessness. So on the job, on my job, if my boss says, I want you to do this by Thursday, and I know it's an impossible job, but I can't say to him, no, that's impossible. You're out of your head, right? I can't say that because he's my boss. I have to get this done, and I can't do a good job, and I have to get it done by Thursday. We say, oh, I'm very stressed. My boss told me I have to get this done by Thursday. But you see, that's really not a problem of stress. That's a problem of powerlessness. See, you could do some yoga, you could do some meditation, but it doesn't really solve the problem, which is that your boss is not consulting with you about your work task. He's a bad boss. That's the real problem, see. So, powerlessness is not the same as stress. We need a little stress. Being a little stressed is not a bad thing. When you draw the bow tightly, when you're sitting on the cushion and you're pushing your breath out and you're pushing the pain away, that you could describe that as a little stressful. But you know, when you get off the cushion, I think you will feel more alive. You will feel more alive. I have friends who are involved in the martial arts. You know, they practice many, many hours every week. And they have to endure certain kinds of physical discomfort, you know. And it's stressful to be in a contest with somebody else, you know. But they feel more alive, more alive. So, you know, please realize that there's a difference between stress and powerlessness. And by the way, I think Zen is good training for, in a certain way, Zen has a sort of warrior element. It doesn't mean you're going to punch people, but it means we're learning how to summon up inside of ourselves our reserves of strength and energy and concentration so that we can deal with life more effectively and fully and with fearlessness. If we imagine ourselves as powerless people, helpless people, there's very little we can do in life. You know, we aren't ever really powerless or helpless. We have this wonderful body and this wonderful mind that we can use to act on and with the world. And Zazen is showing us how to use, to summon up our force, our life energy, our chi, and focus our energy on a goal and expand our awareness. See? So this is a little bit like being a warrior, right? Not afraid, drawing on your energy, being able to focus on a goal. All of these things are like training for life. Training for life. And I think they make us less powerless. Less powerless. You know, to be a man of Zen or a woman of Zen is to understand yourself as a being who has the capacity to change in response to circumstances. As a person who is in control of her own life. In control of your own life. Not helpless. See? Not helpless. So, little stress is okay, right? What the problem is the feeling of powerlessness. That's the disease. That's very destructive for human beings. And Zazen is not about powerlessness. It's about cultivating your power, cultivating your energy, and using it to awaken yourself. Let me just go back to the koan, because it appears that I've said nothing about the koan. A monk asked Jing Wan, what is the great meaning of Buddhism? What is the Buddha's body of reality? Jing Wan said, what is the price of rice in Luling? One of the first teachings the Buddha ever delivered was that you are what you think. You are what you think. That's one of the first teachings the historical Buddha ever delivered. You are as you think. And, you know, in a certain way, what that means is that, let's say, you know, basically I go around... I go around being angry at people all the time. You know, I may feel that I'm not basically this angry person. That's not the real me. Yeah? And the Buddha said, no, that is the real you right now. That's who you really are. You know, so what you think, your mental life, is who you really are. You're not something separate from your thoughts. Basically, you know, so therefore you have to think the right things. You have to think the right things. So, there are people, I have friends who won't watch violent movies. And I respect that decision, because what they're really saying is there are certain things I don't want to put in my mind. Now, I don't agree with them. For example, I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, right? And like everybody else, I couldn't believe what happened last week. But all the same, you know, the Buddha was saying, look, your mind is like an ecology, right? You don't eat junk food. You don't eat junk food if you want to be healthy. So if you go home after you're doing your zazen and you have a bunch of chips and dip and you have a hot dog or something, you know, you're not doing good things to your body, right? You're just not. So if you want to take care of your body, you give your body nourishing food. You do the same with your mind. You try to give your mind good food. And that means, basically observing morality in your conduct, and so on. Actually trying to be a noble person, and so on. But, you know, this idea that you are what you think is not just about changing your thoughts. It's not. You know, people didn't quite grasp this. You know, if Buddhism was just about thinking the right things, then we could just have a book that would be called the Sutras, and we could just study the Sutras, and that would be good enough. Right? So we just have to think the right things. So we'd all read the Diamond Sutra, we'd memorize the Diamond Sutra, and we'd recite the Diamond Sutra. But actually, that wasn't what the Buddha taught. The Buddha actually didn't teach the study of sutras. Even though you should read the sutras to figure out what the Buddha did teach, he didn't say, my path is the study of sutras. That wasn't what the Buddha taught. He taught basically living a moral life, observing the precepts, and then cultivating cultivating an awakened mind. So the method of Buddhism isn't scriptural study. That's not helps, but the method of Buddhism is meditation, and that's how the Buddha achieved enlightenment. So when you start with the recognition that I am what I think, it's also true I am how I think. I am how I think. See, so Buddhism is not about any particular set of, it's not about acquiring a particular set of beliefs. Here's what Buddhists believe. Many years ago, I was asked to give a lecture on Buddhism. And I gave the lecture, and at the end, a student, actually he was a Chinese person, stood up and he said, you haven't mentioned the Eightfold Path, and you haven't mentioned the precepts. And this was a terrible talk, and you're a bad person. And a phony, also. He didn't quite put it that way, but he just said, you haven't ever talked about Buddhism this whole time. You know. But I was talking about Buddhism. Those are important, but the Buddha pursued awakening by doing just what we are doing, sitting on the cushion. And this was called bhavana, or cultivation, mental cultivation. And basically, the Buddha did not... So Buddhism is not just about having the right ideas. It's about how to enter the right state of mind. The right state of mind. And that's what meditation is all about. We're learning how... there is no such thing as consciousness. There is no such thing as consciousness. There are consciousnesses. There are many, many different forms of consciousness. If you think about it, you know, in chemistry you study the spectrum, right? Red, orange, yellow, etc., all the way to violet, right? So this is the spectrum of light. But there's a spectrum of consciousness too, right? There are many different forms of consciousness. Some forms of consciousness are hell realms, you know, anger, fear, envy, lust. Those are the hell realms. There are these other states of consciousness which you can't get to by just reading sutras, but you can get to by drawing the bow and letting the arrow go. Ki and kyo. See, we sit on the cushion and we go, you're actually like going through different states of consciousness. And there are some states of consciousness that are that are really deeply enlightened, you know, deeply enlightened. You know, if you read the sutras, they really don't make any sense unless you understand that they're describing the reality as it is experienced through an unusual state of consciousness, which we ourselves can enter if we practice Zazen regularly. So, basically, you know, when you do your Zazen, you're learning how to enter these different, more advanced states of consciousness. And you gradually learn how to enter these states of consciousness which are open, awake, compassionate, even selfless. After 3 days of Sesshin, you're in a totally different place. The self is not at the center of your consciousness. It's at the far edge of your consciousness. And the world is now experienced as like a big circle. Everything is in this big circle, and consciousness is not fixated on the self. It's like this ambient, all-embracing consciousness, decentered and all-embracing. See, this is a very advanced state of consciousness. There are states of consciousness in which everything is like deliciously sweet and beautiful. This is another state. There are many states of consciousness. And eventually they lead to awakening, the state of consciousness which is basically the one in which the Buddha entered after meditating all night and seeing the morning star, at which is described in the sutras. So, you know, Zazen, Buddhism in general, can be understood as a art of consciousness. You know, painters work with paints, musicians work with music, we work with consciousness. And the idea is to produce an awakened being, and everything we do on the cushion is designed to get to that goal, and then to take that awakened mind and use it in everyday life to make life better for yourself and for everyone else. And, you know, basically, Zazen is not about reading books, although that's important. Please read a book every day if you like. It's not about studying the sutras, but please study the sutras. You have to live an ethical life, and then you pursue awakening. And you pursue, you know, it sounds so majestic, you know, pursue awakening. Yes, yes, that sounds wonderful. How do I do that? You sit down on the cushion until your legs hurt, and you take your breath and you push your pain away. That's how it's done, right? You could spend the next 20 years studying the sutras. You could do 1,000 prostrations. You could, you know, go to visit the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala. It wouldn't help, you know. I'm telling you, you'd be inspired, but you wouldn't be any closer. How do you do it? You sit down on the cushion, you straighten your back, you watch the breath. You're going to have pain because you're a human being. You push the pain away and you enter a deeper state of consciousness. That's how it's done. You could say that's the price of rice in Luling. Yes? So basically, this is a wonderful path. I have to tell you, I can't think of any better way to spend a morning. I hope that I spend the last morning of my life just like this. Yes? Sometimes you might think, what am I doing here? You know, my legs hurt. I'm tired. You know, why am I doing this? But every once in a while, you get to that place, right, where you're open, your heart is open, your mind is open. You might not even conceptualize it. You just feel better. Feel better. This guy who I was talking to last night, he said, you know, I don't know what it is. He said, my wife tried this. She doesn't like it. I brought a friend here. She didn't like it. He said, I don't get it, because I love this, right? And he said, I don't know why, but I feel better. Well, that's definitely the case. If this is your thing, you know, please pursue it with diligence. It won't let you down. A monk asked Jing Huan, what is the great meaning of Buddhism. Jingwan said, "What is the price of rice in Luling?" Verse, "The accomplished work of great peace has no sign or no form. It lies in the formless. The family way of the peasants is most pristine, only concerned with village songs and festival drinking." In other words, just being here in the moment, peasants don't study philosophy, they're just in the moment 100%, see. So be a peasant. "How would they know of the virtues of Shun or the benevolence of Yao? Just practice this simple way."